Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon. You are listening to KTOO and I am your Monday host, Joan Pardis. Today on the show, we'll profile Swampy Acres with guests Wendy Smith. We'll get a virtual taste of a new restaurant in town, the Clay Oven, Indian cuisine. We'll celebrate the appointment of Junoite Jennifer Strickland as the first honorary consul to the Philippines for the state of Alaska. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. And as far as the weather, mostly cloudy, slight chance of rain late.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, says the Navajo Nation has failed to spend nearly $150 million in housing grants for fiscal year 2012. As KUNM's Tristan Autone reports, since 2000, the tribe has failed to spend the money nearly every year.
In a letter of warning to the Navajo Housing Authority, HUD gave notice that the tribe was in violation of the Native American Housing Assistance and Self-Determination Act. The violation? Failure to spend grant money awarded to Navajo Housing for crime prevention and safety, tenant-based rental assistance, and rehabilitation of old units, to name a few. The total grant for those programs in 2012, about $215 million. The money actually spent on those programs over that period, about $66 million. Since 2000, HUD estimates that the Navajo Housing Authority has sat on nearly $434 million in unspent housing funds. Repeated calls to the Navajo Nation for comment on the unspent funds were not returned. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
A Native American man who died trying to save a child's life earlier this year is being honored. As South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports, this week's event will recognize Lyle Eagletail.
Nearly 3 months ago, the Wallace family of Vermilion, South Dakota, was spending a day at Falls Park in Sioux Falls. A young member of the family entered the Big Sioux River in the park and was quickly obscured by foam from the falls. 28-year-old Lyle Eagletail immediately jumped into the water to save the youth. Eagletail and the child's older sister, Madison Wallace, drowned in the rescue effort. The younger child was unhurt. This Friday, the Native American Council of Tribes is hosting a walk and picnic to honor Eagletail's sacrifice. He also received a special honoring at the University of South Dakota's annual Wachipi, and a local bank has been taking donations since the time of Eagletail's death. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Actor Martin Sheen is mentoring youth in Shiprock, New Mexico this week at the Native Vision Camp. According to the group, Sheen is working with some campers in an acting workshop called The Navajo News. In this online promotional video, Sheen talks about his involvement with Native Vision. He says when he commits himself to an organization or cause, he doesn't really think of changing minds.
I think in terms of trying to just plant a seed or an idea, and do not expect what society might call success. You do it because you cannot not do it and be yourself. It's how we become ourselves. We step out of normal situations and challenge ourselves. That's the only way anything has ever gotten done in the entire history of the world.
The camp is also offering sports clinics. More than 1,000 adults and children are expected to attend the event, which runs through Tuesday. Native Vision is a partnership operated by Johns Hopkins Center for American Indian Health. The Alaska Native community is remembering the life of Athabascan elder Katie John, who died Friday. The Alaska Federation of Natives says her name became synonymous during a landmark Native subsistence rights case decades ago. The organization says her win established the legal precedent for subsistence protections that remains a cornerstone of subsistence advocacy today. John was a tireless advocate and dedicated teacher of culture and language. Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado is inviting the public to this weekend's Native American Film Festival. It will take place at the Native American Center. Films include Keeping It Sacred. It was made by the Peace Jam Group at the Southern Ute Boys and Girls Club. The film tells the story of a young man named Andrew who must go on a quest to learn about sacred tobacco in order to help his dad quit smoking. Members of the Peace Jam Group will discuss their film after the showing. During this month in 2012, the Sioux Ann Big Crow Boys and Girls Club on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota celebrated its 20th anniversary. The Boys and Girls Clubs of America said it was the first such club to be established in Indian country. The celebration included the opening of a new 30,000 square foot facility with a soccer field, pool, gym, and technology center. The club and others across the country serve Native youth and include programs to reduce gang violence and promote healthy lifestyles. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Mayor Merrill Sanford. One of the special things about living in Alaska's capital city is the amount of community involvement you'll find. People care about Juneau, and it shows every day as together we build a community. One way of taking part is to follow the activities of your assembly. If you can't make it down to our regular meetings, you can still follow the action live on KTOO News 104.3 on your FM dial. It's just another way of being involved. Thanks.
And now the Writer's Almanac for Monday, June 3rd, 2013. It's the birthday of poet Allen Ginsberg, born in Newark, New Jersey, 1926, raised by a family of Russian immigrant Jews. His father was a high school teacher and a poet, and his mother struggled with mental illness her entire life. At Columbia University, he fell in with a group of poets and artists that included Jack Kerouac, Neil Cassidy, and William Burroughs. They read poetry to each other and took drugs and had all-night conversations, and sometime in the late 40s, they started calling themselves Beats. When Ginsberg was 26, sitting in his apartment in Harlem, he had a vision of William Blake. He called it a sudden awakening into a totally deeper, real universe than I'd been existing in. But Ginsberg still wasn't sure that he wanted to be a poet. After he graduated from Columbia, he worked as an apprentice book reviewer and for an advertising agency in an office in the Empire State Building. In 1955, he moved to San Francisco, where he became part of the poetry scene that included Gary Snyder and Lawrence Ferlinghetti. In October of that year, he read his poem Howl at the Sixth Gallery. It was a huge success, and it launched a writing career that lasted over 40 years. The poem Howl begins, "I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, naked, dragging themselves through the Negro streets at dawn, looking for an angry fix. Angel-headed hipsters burning for the ancient heavenly connection to the starry dynamo in the machinery of night." And it's the birthday of Larry McMurtry, born in Wichita Falls, Texas in 1936. His early novels were set in the Southwest, on the frontier and in small towns. They included Horsemen Pass By and The Last Picture Show, both made into movies. Then in 1981, he wrote an essay in which he said that the cowboy myth had become an inhibiting rather than a creative factor of our literary life, and that there was really no more need to be said about that. The future of Texas literature was urban, he said. Now what we need is a Balzac, a Dickens. But a few years later, he published one of his best books, Lonesome Dove, an historical novel about a cattle drive, and it won the Pulitzer Prize. Larry McMurtry, who said, "The earth is mostly just a boneyard, but pretty in the sunlight." And it's the birthday of Josephine Baker, born in St. Louis, Missouri, 1906. She was told that she was too skinny and too dark to be a chorus girl at the Plantation Club, but she worked backstage, learned all the routines, and went on as an understudy. Instead of acting cool and sophisticated on stage, she rolled her eyes and pretended to fall over things. Audiences loved her. She wore skimpy costumes made of feathers and bananas and sang and danced in a way no one had ever seen before. Baker said, "I wasn't really naked. I simply didn't have any clothes on." And here's a poem by Willa Cather entitled Sonnet. Alas, that June should come when thou didst go. I think you passed each other on the way, and seeing thee, the summer loved thee so that all her loveliness she gave away. Her rare perfumes in hawthorn boughs distilled, blushing, she in thy sweeter bosom left, thine arms with all her virgin roses filled, yet felt herself the richer for thy theft, beggared herself of mourning for thine eyes, hung on the lips of every bird the tune, breathed on the cheek her soft vermilion dyes, and in thee set the singing heart of June. And so, not only do I mourn thy flight, but summer comes despoiled of her delight. A poem by Willa Cather entitled Sonnet from April Twilights, published by Amerian Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, offering tools to help businesses and professionals improve their search results. Learn more at 1-800-REPUTATION. This is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
Is Bird Note. Join me today at the Whidbey Island farm of Mark Borden and his family. Barn swallows nest in the goat pen, cliff swallows against the barn, violet green and tree swallows in the fence. In the fence? Let's hear from Mark.
What I've done is I've taken our vinyl horse fence and modified every fourth post to make a bird nest.
Why did Mark go to the trouble?
Well, I just love birds, of course, but the original reason I did it was to keep the insects down on my horse farm, because the horse flies were just incredibly thick down there. It was amazing. One time I was watching my mule, and this giant silver and black horse fly was trying to bite it, and everywhere it landed, the mule would manage to get it away either by biting at it or swishing her tail at it, and then it chose to be right on top of the center of her back, where she couldn't bite it, and she couldn't get it with her tail either. So she actually rolled over on the ground to try to get this giant horsefly off of her, and then the horsefly got up and flew off. The horsefly flew off across the pasture, and while it was across the pasture out in the middle, in came a swallow, a tree swallow, and just whap! I couldn't believe a swallow took on such a huge horsefly. So I thought, that's the answer. So I built a little box out of leftover piece of horse fence, and I put it up, and within a day, a pair of swallows moved into it. So then I looked, and I thought, the fence is only 10 feet away from this box. And that was the epiphany, is I can put a nest box right in the fence. So I went ahead and I put one in the fence, and I stepped back, and literally within a minute they found the nest box and went right into it.
See pictures and learn more at our website, birdnote.org.
Hello, you are listening to KTOO in Alaska's capital city. I'm Joan Partis, your Monday host, and on the phone with me is Wendy Smith of Swampy Anchors. Hi, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Joan.
How are things?
Oh, they're good. Now, listening to that last little bit that I was able to hear, I think we need some of those. Some swallows that eat all the mosquitoes. What do you think about that?
I think we should do that. As soon as we hang up the phone, let's get on that. I think it's a great idea. So, Wendy, what is going on at Swampy Acres? Let's actually start at the very beginning. What is Swampy Acres?
Well, let's see if I can explain this, because it's complex, and it's really not that complex. It started in 1973 with my mother moving to out the road, or rural Juneau, which was 11 miles at that point. And I think she really wanted to be a quiet hippie in the woods with some chickens and a goat and her dog and her kids. And it's blossomed into what we affectionately call the albatross. So we have this huge thing that really is still just one lady in the woods running it all. And I'm her daughter, who has moved on, has two children and a full-time job, and like to play there after school.
Still.
So that's kind of it in a nutshell. And I know you and I have had our introduction at Swampy Acres, which was always the highlight of my life.
Mine too.
Teaching riding lessons.
It's true. So, I think I was Wendy's oldest, you correct me if I'm wrong, oldest horseback riding student. Is that true? When I came to Juneau probably 13 years ago.
It is actually not true. I had a woman in her late 60s who I gave pretty much, she had MS, but I just gave her pony rides for the movement in her hips and her back. And so I'd have to say that she was my oldest.
Yes, that's okay. I'll definitely give up the title for that. That's really beautiful. So there are animals at Swampy Acres. There are horses, and there are chickens, and there's goats. And you have, like, farm days a couple of times a year. Why don't you tell everybody what goes on at Swampy Acres?
We actually have done farm day only two times.
Oh.
And it's only occurred once a year in May in conjunction with the co-op preschool. And it really gives me an excuse to get my butt off the couch and out of my winter funk to clean up Swampy Acres, because a lot of the things that we do daily, chores, doesn't give us the time or motivation to spray down the buildings and paint them and scrape out the poop and make sure the drainage is all correct and straighten up the storage areas and things like that. And so I've used it as a tool to spiff up my parents' place with the help of the preschool. And then in turn, they get an excellent fundraiser out of it. So that's our only public outreach. Because again, like I said, one lady in the woods running a feed store, and she doesn't run a zoo. And so we do a zoo day, basically.
Cool.
In May.
Yeah. It's the Juneau Zoo, for sure.
Yeah, it's been so successful, but again, it takes a lot of people.
It does take a lot of people. And so there's the feed store. So all different types of feed for all different types of animals. And
yep.
Are you doing horseback riding lessons there? Are people storing their horses there?
So Swampy Acres has a large barn, which my grandfather, when he built it in 1983, said, "When you girls stop liking horses, I'm putting boats in here." No boats. No, still horses. So we rent probably half the stalls out. The other half are, my sister and I and my mom have horses up there. And then the other probably, 10 stalls are rented out to local Juneau people who, come in and take care of their horses morning and night and clean their own stalls. And so it's like a little horse condo, but they rent it. They don't own it.
Mm-hmm.
The feed store is still going strong. You know, it originally started with her getting feed for her own animals and then doing kind of a cooperative issue. So she started ordering more feed than she needed to sell to other community members. And so now she still does that. She has specialty dog foods that you can't find at PetSmart or Petco. She also does chicken feed and duck feed and corn and bedding in large bags and lots of horse feed, of course, and hay and straw and shavings. She dabbles in a little bit of everything, but that's her biggest focus is the feed store. And, of course, her daily chores that she does morning and night that take probably 2 hours every day.
It's a farm.
It is.
And what about the horses? Are you doing horseback riding lessons there?
No horseback riding lessons. Mm-hmm. I haven't. It's probably, I don't want to say that it's in my future plans because, of course, I work as a physician assistant 32 hours a week and raise my two little boys. And I enjoy giving riding lessons, but it takes a lot of financial responsibility. And then to make up that, you have to give a lot of riding lessons. And I just don't have the time for it. So we're not giving riding lessons right now. There's one lady in town who does, after her full-time job and on the weekends, and she plans on relocating in September. But there is one resource that I would love to give you if you want.
Yes, absolutely.
Her name is Abby Madsen of Greatland Stables, and her phone number is 723-4623.
Right. And while I took horseback riding lessons with Wendy before she was married and before her two boys, my daughter has taken horseback riding lessons with Abby, and Abby is great. So she's relocating, and she's the only show in town right now as far as horseback riding. And even if she wasn't, she's terrific. I strongly urge the horse enthusiasts to get in touch with her because she's got a great situation at the Greatland Stables. So, and that's your cousin, isn't it, Wendy?
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. We were one of those girls that my grandfather built that barn for in 1983.
That's great. And you also were very involved with 4-H for a while, weren't you?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, until my kids started doing – how he stopped wanting to be in the backpack and do pony rides. Dang it, I hate it when they grow up. No, I don't. I'm loving it. But I did. I mentored you know, probably at a group of 20 at its height, and it's definitely kind of smoldering a bit. I know that, like any good phoenix, it will blossom back into life. But at this present moment, there's a small young group that Abby is heading up right now. And as soon as my kids are a little more independent, I might jump back in.
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great.
Well, I like it.
And when you do, please come on the show, because not only does the rest of Jenna want to know about it, I want to know about it as well.
There you go.
All right. Well, Wendy, thank you so much for calling in today. So I've been talking with Wendy Smith at Swampy Acres, and you are listening to Jenna Afternoon. Have a great day, Wendy.
Thanks, Joan. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks.
I am young in this world. I'm glad I am alive. I know someday I'll fly away on the wings of horses. And I wish I had a horse of my own, a wild horse that would never stray on wings we could fly home free, a wild horse that would always stay, a wild horse that would always stay by me. I'm glad my wish will come true. I know that dreams never die. I'm glad that you will believe too on the wings of horses. On the wings of horses. On the wings.
Hello, I am Joan Pardis, your Monday host. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTLO. The weather today is mostly cloudy with a slight chance of rain. Tonight, rain developing in the early evening, lows around 48. Tuesday, rain, highs around 55. Southeast wind, 10 miles per hour, shifting to the northwest in the afternoon. And then it looks like rain likely and mostly cloudy for the rest of the week. So there's been a change of lineup as far as our guests this afternoon. In the studio with me, besides Jeff Brown, who is my engineer, who I am eternally grateful to, is Christy Dellingham, the Curriculum Development Coordinator for CARES Program. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Joan.
How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. Go ahead.
Oh, it's okay. I was wondering, what is the CARES Program?
The CARES Program is an after-school credit recovery program for high school students. It's a 21st Century Learning Community grant, so it's a federal grant that the Juneau School District has been awarded. It's in the fourth year of a five-year grant cycle. And what we do is we support all the Juneau School District's high school students in achieving graduation. And so if a student has, we support them in a number of different ways, and our two main ways we support them is if they've failed a class, they can recover that class by taking after school or summer school classes. And the other model that we've kind of moved towards is this prevention, this idea of prevention. So before a student fails their class, we want to step in, we want to work with their day school teachers, we want to support those students before they receive a failing grade. So we do a lot of what's called Super Saturday tutoring options. Those happen four times a year right before the end of a quarter grading period. The day school teachers come on in to school on a Saturday morning, and students are invited to catch up on some missing work or tests they didn't take.
Wow. So the day school teachers identify them and then work with you as far as bringing them in?
We do. We feel like the day school teacher link is a really important link, because if it's those day school teachers who identify those students who are right on the edge there, and they're also the ones who are supporting those students to pass, then it's more accountability to those students to come and to show up if my teacher invited me.
Right. That sounds great. And you said there's a summer school program. Is there something happening this summer?
Yes. Well, we're in the midst of our summer school program right now. We have approximately 70 students who are dedicated towards graduating high school. And so they are taking, right now it's running out at Thunder Mountain High School. It's running from 9 in the morning till about 1:15 in the afternoon. So we are actually feeding the students breakfast and lunch. And those students hopefully will be completed by June 14th.
Wow, 70 students. So how much staff do you have? How many?
Well, let me break it down into classes, and then I'll kind of go into staff-wise. We're teaching two math classes. One is an Algebra 1 class. One is a geometry class. We're doing what's called blended learning, and that part of the class is on the computer, and its students are moving at their own pace. And then part of the class is the students are doing an applied project. This quarter's applied project is students are building cardboard boats that they are going to have a regatta, and they're going to race their cardboard boats out in Twin Lakes.
Oh, cool.
And so they're having to do all the math and the calculations and testing volume and density and their water line, their center of gravity based upon the weight of the two partners that are going to be in the boat. So we have those two math classes. We have two PE classes going on right now. We have a biology class going on right now. And then we have what's called a program learning, which is a computer-based class.
Wow. So if these students, they're recovering these credits from this year, so these are not seniors, or are they seniors, or is it everybody?
It's freshmen through seniors. We have a handful of students who are taking these classes in order to graduate this current school year.
Oh, that's great that they
and
have the
so
opportunity to
they
do that.
They do have that opportunity, and it's kind of a statewide opportunity. As far as staff we have working, we have approximately 8 or 9 staff, including teachers and kind of core care staff.
That sounds great.
Out at Thunder Mountain working right now.
And it's been like a 3-week program, or?
It's about 2.5 weeks. In the past, we've run it for 4 weeks, and we got some feedback from students, and you know, we're really into listening to our students. And they said, I just feel like I don't have a summer when it's 4 weeks long. So we took that, we kind of crunched it down and condensed it to 2.5 weeks.
That sounds great. And now if you're a parent and you're concerned about your student and recovering credits, can they contact you directly, or does it all have to be referred by school district employees?
Parents can contact us directly. If they're concerned about, one, is my student's failing, can you give me some information about some of those prevention, Super Saturdays information, or they can contact us if their student has failed a class and they need to take a class. And so that phone number is 523-1817.
Okay.
And
when,
they can call us.
When this class is wrapped up, are you taking some of the summer off? Or, I mean, like, is this then, you know, a lot of district personnel throughout the state, they do a special program, but then, of course, they have their summers off and they come back usually in August. Is that the same here?
That's the same for us. So we will take the rest of the summer off, and we will be back in August, but we will be checking our you know, voicemail when we come back into town, and we'll catch up with those parents.
then, right. Well, there's no rush. School.
So I will also say that one of the other classes I mentioned was our biology class, and that's kind of how I got swindled into the studios, was I came in to talk to Jeff and to you guys. In our botany class, our students are putting on these scientific podcasts. And so last year, our students worked with Riley Woodford, and they created podcasts and Helen Watkins and these podcasts about plants. And so I came in to see what kind of partnership we can do again with K2 where students can air their podcasts.
Oh, so, that sounds great. I'm sure that will be forthcoming. So as soon as we have that scheduled, we'll broadcast that here on the show.
Yeah.
And that would be great. And then also, if you'd like a student to come in, maybe talk next Monday about the experience, that might be interesting too, just, you know, from a student's point
that
of view.
That would be... Yeah,
if that's available.
We should chat to see if we can work it out.
Great. Christy, thank you for stopping in today. We're going to go to an excerpt. Okay, we're not going to an excerpt from Mudrooms. We're going to take a little break and be back with our next guest. Thanks for listening. Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. That was the National Anthem of the Philippines. And the reason we are listening to that is I am sitting in the studio with Jenny Gomez-Strickler, who is going to be the first honorary counsel of the Philippines to the state of Alaska. And she is going to start that position this evening at 6 o'clock when she is sworn into office by the Philippine ambassador to the U.S. and the consul general from San Francisco, Marciano Painter. Jenny, thank you so much for coming in today. It's an important day for you. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Great.
So congratulations. Let's talk a little bit about what this all means, okay? So you were the president of the Filipino, you are currently or a former president of the Filipino community?
I'm now the former president of the Filipino community. I served the community as vice president for 4 years and president for 6 years.
Wow, okay.
And my term ended in last December.
Okay. So how did this appointment come about?
Well, one of our members here, who frequently visits our local legislative offices, were talking about my last term in office and trying to find a way to keep me around and to see what Alaska could use or needed. And actually it was through Don Young's office. Connie McKenzie was a big help. And they did a little research on the computer to see what other states had and what they could do. And the idea popped up about Alaska needs an honorary consul general here to service all the Filipinos. So when that idea came up, the next question was, who, how should we do this and who? And my name popped up, and this was not on my radar. I had no idea this was even being discussed until the day I got a call and said, Jenny, if this came about and it was offered to you, would you consider it? And I thought, me who was born in Hawaii and had, at that time had never been to the Philippines, and I don't speak any Filipino fluently, although I understand some and I know a few words. And I had to think about it and to do a little research of what this position would do and what it really meant. And I thought about it even more when I found out it's not a paid position. It's strictly voluntary. And I thought about it, and I thought, I'm retired. You know, I don't have anything else to do, so why not? And so they submitted my name to the consulate, and I got a packet of information that was very thick, that required all kinds of background check, and I swear that now the Philippine government knows more about me and my family than anybody else in the state or even my cousins in Hawaii or anywhere else in the U.S. But I got some real nice endorsements to take the position, and the paperwork started to snowball, and it helped that I had met our Consul General Pioneer when he brought the consulate on wing staff here in 2010.
Oh, okay. So you had a little prior connection, well, not connection, at least acquaintance with the Consul General from San Francisco.
Yes.
And the Honorary Consul of Alaska is under his jurisdiction.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
But before we get into the hierarchy, I'm curious, you said that you wanted to know what it would entail, what you would have to do. So what is it that you're expected to do with this title then?
As far as I know, I have a full day of training coming up with the consulate staff here in a few days. But from what I gather so far, it's any issues, Filipino issues involving Filipinos living in Alaska who need help, who run into trouble, who need to process paperwork, like any legal documents, passport, who need help filling out dual citizenship forms or... A large part of it will be paper handling, and it's very much like a liaison between the Filipinos here and the San Francisco office. I was already informed that I will not be authorized to swear, to give any oaths, because I'm not a salaried employee of the government. But I can handle paper, and one of the things that really excite me is I can facilitate projects between State of Alaska and the Philippines, and that kind of plays into, I was part of the November 2012 legislative trade mission group that went to the Philippines, and we had discussed ahead of time possible projects that we could do. And the number one at the top of the list was a seafood festival between the Philippines and Alaska. And if there's big interest, perhaps we can look into selling or shipping seafood there.
That sounds great. That sounds great. So that right now is one of your top projects that you have in your back pocket.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So why does Alaska need a council?
Well, there's a lot of Filipinos in Alaska. I know in general, I was just letting Rosemary know that I'm more familiar with Juneau right now and Southeast, but I need to learn about the Filipinos in the rest of the state. But there's 3,000 alone in Juneau, you know, roughly 10% of the Juneau population.
That's a very large percentage.
And there's an even larger number in the entire state. So it would be helpful to have a local representative here. Until the consulate on wings started to fly to Juneau to provide services in 2010, anyone here who needed consulate services either had to go to the San Francisco office or fly to Anchorage. And it's my understanding in Anchorage, there are so many customers, there are so many Filipinos, they operate by appointment only. So, and they're only there for a few days like they are here. So it would be rough going or difficult trying to get in.
It sounds like there's a real need. There's a demand for hands-on help as far as any questions dealing with the two states, the country and the state of Alaska. So what do you think you'll be dealing with, visa problems and immigration issues? Do you think you'll be working with cruise ship staff?
Absolutely. To what extent, I don't know yet until I meet with my trainers. But yes. I will be providing some sort of assistance.
Right. And it looks here that there are only 10 consulates in the whole country. There's San Francisco and L.A., Chicago, D.C., New York, and then Hawaii, Guam, and Saipan. So that is really a wonderful honor. We're so happy that you're sharing your time with us. And earlier, Jenny was referring to Rosemary. Rosemary Alexander, the head of news for KTOO, is here in the studio with us, along with Jeff Brown, who's the engineer for Mondays with me on Juneau Afternoon. So, Jenny, I'm sure you are really, your being sworn in tonight is going to be very exciting. I would think it would be very exciting. And this is the first time I've met you, but I suspect you've done a lot of work in the Filipino community already to be tapped as a president and vice president in years of service. So I want to thank you for that. But I also want to ask you, along with this trades, the seafood idea that you have, what is it that when you get sworn in and you wake up tomorrow and say, wow, I could actually do something for the community, what do you have in mind?
There's a lot of things I need to get organized and get together. I've been receiving emails from the consulate on different projects that the consulate has interest in. For example, our consul general had sent out notice to all of the key people about, for example, establishing some sort of a management team in the event of crisis so that we can immediately respond or help people throughout the state. I haven't really reached out to the other communities yet to see what's out there and what the needs are.
So at this point, it's listening. It's finding out where you are and then seeing what actually rises to the top that needs to be taken care of immediately. Jenny, do you think you could be doing some travel?
If there's any travel to be done, it comes out of my own pocket because I'm not a salaried employee, unless there's an absolute need and I get ordered to go somewhere by the consulate, which we're not talking about me traveling
right
yet.
I guess the honorary is the unpaid part, the honorary.
Right.
Jenny, one more question. Is this a time-based appointment?
Yes.
Okay, so how...
My appointment, it was originally issued on October 8th, 2012, and it will expire on October 8th, 2015.
Okay, it's a three-year appointment.
Yes, and there is an opportunity to be extended if I'm interested in, or I can end it and then the consulate would be looking for someone else.
Okay. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Jenny Gomez-Strickler, the former president of the Filipino community, who's going to be sworn in this evening as the first honorary consul for the state. She's going to work under the jurisdiction of the San Francisco consulate, and the appointment tonight is going to be officiated by, I believe, the consul general from San Francisco, but the Philippine ambassador to the U.S. is also in Juneau to do this. Jenny, congratulations, and thank you for sharing your day with us today.
Thank you.
Okay, so here we go. We're going to listen to My Harana, a Filipino serenade. You were listening to Juneau Afternoon. We were just listening to Charmaine Clamore, My Harana. Charmaine was in Juneau with the Juneau Jazz and Classics several years ago, and she is a wonderful musician. So I just want to add one thing about the interview we just had with Jenny Gomez-Strickler, who is going to be the first honorary consul for the Philippines to the state of Alaska. She wanted me to let everyone know that there was another honorary consul in Juneau during statehood, and that was to France. But she is the first honorary consul to the Philippines, and she'll be sworn in tonight at 6 o'clock by the Philippine ambassador to the U.S. So congratulations, Jenny. I am sure you're going to do great work. And here we're going to go to an excerpt from Mudrooms. Mudrooms is a monthly storytelling event. It's on hiatus for the summer where your neighbors and friends come and tell a seven-minute story. It's been really well attended and great storytelling. So here we go to listen to one of the stories from the last event.
Up next is Giselle Stone. Born and raised here in Juneau, Giselle is a third-generation Junoite on her mother's side. As of 2 days ago, she received her master's degree in education from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Congrats. This past winter, Giselle and her boyfriend Cliff moved on to their 34-foot Cal sailboat, currently residing in Douglas Harbor, and are planning on setting sail this fall, heading down the Pacific coast to Central America and beyond. Here's Giselle.
I love water, and what I love the most about water is swimming in the water. I love the effortlessness that I feel, the grace that I feel going through the water. I just am in love with everything about swimming. And one of the things I liked the most when I was little was the pride that I felt, and that I could kind of be a little bit more risky when I was swimming. I was a pretty cautious child, but when it came to swimming, I was able to, get a little prideful and take a little bit more risks. And I never thought I'd find anybody else who loved water as much as me until I met my boyfriend, Cliff. And he was so giddy and so childlike when we were around water that I knew that we had to go swimming together. So when we started dating, we actually had two different big, large world travel adventures planned right around the same time. I was going to go to Prague and he was going to go to Chile, and we chose to actually cancel both of those trips and go to Thailand together to fulfill some swimming bucket list dreams, and we went. We got into Bangkok, took a long night train down all the way the coast to Surat Thani, if anybody's been there. Ferried, bused, took a taxi truck, and managed to get to our hotel the next night. And that morning we got up, and of course the first thing we did was put on our swimsuits, run up a little hill, go down this old little rickety driftwood staircase into this secluded cove, ran out onto this pier just sprinting, and jumped into this beautiful blue crystal water. It was beautiful. It was warm. It was like bath water, nothing I had ever experienced in Juneau. And I was so happy. I couldn't believe it. And that's essentially what we did for the next about 3 weeks, was swim every day. And when we weren't in the water, we were on our scooter zipping over to the next beach to get in another reef or snorkel somewhere else. But on our last day in Thailand, we chose, after doing a whole trip of self-guided scuba diving, free diving, snorkeling, anything you can imagine that has to do with the water, we chose to spend our money and do a little plushy sunset snorkel dinner cruise. And they picked us up in a long boat, which is a big, long wooden boat, and they actually have a car motor strapped to the back with a really long propeller that sticks in the water. And they took us out and basically dropped us off at a couple of snorkeling spots on little islands. It was beautiful. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything spectacular. We had quite the trip and had seen quite a lot of sea life during the trip. And they fed us dinner on a nice beach, which was beautiful, incredible sunset. And then they piled us all back onto the boat and headed us back home. And it was by then getting dark. And the moon, of course, was really high in the sky. We were going back pitch black. They actually told us to watch out for whale sharks, which we were intently watching for. This is one thing we had looked for, actually, our whole trip. It was like the infamous whale shark. And we were told that only Americans could see whale sharks. So we were looking out for them. But we sadly didn't see any whale sharks. But they did actually, we were kind of headed back towards our village, and then they started veering off towards the right and told us that they had a little surprise for us. And they headed straight towards this huge rock face. And in Thailand, they have these beautiful limestone cliffs that just jut straight out of the water. They're covered with greenery all over the place. And then at the bottom, they kind of curve in from where the water hits it repeatedly. So there's these huge, like, overhangs, and the water comes underneath. And the boat basically glided right up to this overhang, and the rock face sheltered, well, the moon was basically behind the rock face now, and we were in the dark. The boat, with our driver in the back, our little Thai boat driver, he turned off the motor, and we did have a guide who was with us, and they told us to look in the back of the boat, and sure enough, we looked behind us, and I am sure things that many of you have experienced. We looked behind us and saw beautiful green glowing bioluminescence. And it was so bright and so pure. It was unlike anything I'd ever seen here in Juneau. It was unbelievable just like putting your hand in the water and seeing it. And that's all a very, I know a lot of people have experienced that, but the one thing that we did that was incredible was they actually invited us to swim. And before they even finished the invitation, Cliff had already put his fins on and goggles on and was already diving off the boat. And everybody watched as Cliff dove, perfect streamlined dive in, and his hands hit the water and cut through, and all you could see in that pitch black was his body diving down, covered in these green, glowing, vibrant plankton, and it was incredible. And he had these meter-long fins on, which he had brought for the trip for free diving. So these huge meter-long fins fly into the water and churn up all of these plankton that were about 6 or 7 feet underneath, and we just watched in awe as all you could see was him diving around. I mean, it was the closest thing I could get to seeing like a mermaid or a merman, I guess. And of course, right after that, I immediately am trying frantically to get on my fins and trying to get my snorkel on, and I dive in as well. And what I can remember from diving in is, of course, how warm it was first, which was surprising because it was night and it was black. And they had turned off the little light on the boat, so there was no light to be seen except for those tiny little lights. And as I dove in, I actually let my head come up, and the plankton were kind of just swarming past you. And it, all we could think that it looked like was like on Star Wars when they warp into light speed. And that it literally was like millions of stars just rushing past your little snorkeling goggles. And it was beautiful. And I came up for air and went back down and just appreciated being completely in the dark, which I've never experienced in water. Just completely, complete darkness, but under the water. And being able to hold my hands out in front of me and see not them, but the plankton actually completely covering them. So I knew where my hands were supposed to be. And the only way I could see Cliff was I could see his green glowing body going through the water, swimming around me in circles. And we both saw each other pop up, because all you could see was the shoulders down, green and glowing. So we were clearly both out of the water, and I called for Cliff and told him that it was probably the most beautiful thing that I had ever seen, and had to clear my goggles because I started tearing up and crying, and was so happy to be able to enjoy my best swim yet with him, and I hope to enjoy more. So that's my story.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. That was an excerpt from the latest Mudroom. That was a great story. Thank you for sharing that, Giselle Stone. I also want to thank Christy Dillingham, who came in and kind of pitch hit while one of our guests was missing, and Wendy Smith for calling in and talking about Swampy Acres, and congratulate Jenny Gomez-Strickler one more time on being the first honorary counsel for the state to the Philippines, which is really a wonderful honor. So tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, Annie Bartholomew hosts. Peggy Ann McConaughey and Patricia Deering will be here to highlight Saturday's Family Day at the Lake. They'll be talking to KJ Metcalf and Bunty Reed about Camp Champ. Marcy Pesca will offer a preview of her new fantasy novel based in Juneau. And Sarah Bowman from SAGA will talk about the Sunset Community Paddles and other upcoming outdoor adventures at the Eagle River Valley Center. As far as weather, tonight looks like rain, lows around 48. Tomorrow, rain. Tuesday night, rain. Wednesday, rain. Wednesday is showers. It's interesting. I wanted to find out the difference between showers and rain. Rain is rain. Showers means that it could be raining in different parts of the city, and it's actually not continuous. So anyway, thank you so much for listening to Juno Afternoon, and stay tuned for All Things Considered.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Off Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.com.